Hello, my name is Andy Graydon, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. I will be with you for the next 2 hours, going through some of my work as an artist with sound, as a researcher into island ecologies, especially in the islands of Hawaii, where I'm from, and doing, I guess, a little travelogue. The selections of pieces that I made today were put together in thinking about the last time, I think, that I was here with Tom and Galen at the Wave Farm, about 10 years ago, when they had an event called the Tune Outside. And I was thinking a lot about how influential that that day has always felt to me, where we were coming out to have a performance that was a kind of, you know, it was a listening festival, and everybody was not going to a stage to listen to music, but was given a set of headphones and a receiver, and then walking all the pathways on the farm here, and encountering different kinds of sound and music and live instruments and things in buildings and recordings out in the field through their headphones, that created not only a way of listening to these pieces in a way that was both outside and really intimate, but for me what was so striking about it was it made me really rethink the way that I was supposed to be getting around in the environment. So my kind of music listening brain was overlaid with my listening to the environment and understanding where I was in the world brain. And those two things put together were something that I have been interested in for a really long time, and that moment here at Wave Farm really helped me think that through, I think, in a way that I've been carrying forward for to this day for a very long time. So I put a few things together, and I'll try not to talk for too much longer, but I wanted to introduce them just so that everybody would understand what it is that that you'll be hearing. So the first thing I wanted to do was to start out in the field and to go to some recordings that I made, that I have made over the last year and a half, for a project, a video project that I made following two ecologists who live on the island of Maui. I made this video or this film about Forrest and Kim Starr, these ecologists who are following the native Hawaiian bat population, the Opeapea bat. This particular bat is the only indigenous land mammal in the Hawaiian Islands, and therefore is really important to the environment there. And the fascinating thing in hearing them talk about trying to track this bat was that in order to follow the animal, they had to follow its calls, its ultrasonic bat calls. And in by using these recording methods, where you can capture these ultrasonic calls that they're making for them to navigate their environment, the bats to navigate their environment. But for us to be able to hear them, you have to translate it into a different, into the range of frequencies that humans can hear. And in order to do that, you have to run it through one of three or four different translation schemes. And I thought that idea of needing to dip into this translation process in order to understand a natural environment that was then really affecting the social and political and ecological environment that we humans are all in, became the focus of the piece. So that we're going to hear some bat sounds, and then we're also going to hear from Art Medeiros, who is a botanist on the island of Maui, who is involved in what's called the Awahi Dryland Forest Preserve. He's busy getting grants of land, in which he then creates what he calls exclosures, which are fenced in areas where, instead of trying to keep things, plants or animals in an enclosure. He's trying to keep all of the non-native species, both plants and animals, out of the fencing, so he calls it an exclosure. And we'll just hear him narrate, he's a really interesting character, hear him narrate part of the history of Oahe and his experience in getting it going. Now that that process and being in the islands for a time involved me being there for a few months, during which I took quite a number of field recordings on the island of Oahu, on the island, on the Big Island of Hawaii, and on Maui. And so, rounding out that this set, which will probably last about 15 or 20 minutes, is a kind of medley of recordings made on these different islands, in different with different processes and different filters and things like that. So I think we'll just get started. Thank you very much for listening.
That's the bad stuff. The other stuff is, though, that almost it has 49 species of trees. I was just saying to anybody, if you know your trees at Oahu, you know your trees almost anywhere. You go to another native forest, you're going to see 7 species, 4 species, 3 species. 11 is a diverse forest, you know, but 49 is really hard to get. So I was doing surveys 30 plus years ago for the National Park Service, because they wanted to work in Kaupo, so they wanted to know what else is on Maui. We have permission of the ranch, and I came out here, and I'm the one who coined the word museum forest, because there haven't been babies out here in this forest for hundreds of years, and these trees are really many hundreds of years old.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and they're all dying. We know that now, but And so we called it a museum forest because super rich like a museum, but nothing's alive. And then I picked this one here because, and they're really beautiful, that they have that oriental look, but also this is what happens with these museum forests is the trees die, and I said it was in one report, one windstorm away from being a pasture. When I first came out here, I was a young man, we used to make fences around individual trees. Like, oh, that tree's so special. Let's just profess that tree. Like, there's a big Ohimoka, like that one. That's a real special one up there. So you find a big dinosaur tree like that. Oh, let's fence you. And then the fence, the tree falls down. And then you have an empty fence. So that's why when the Fish and Wildlife Service, one day I got my reputation got better. They said, all right, we got $10,000 we kind of don't know what to do with. It's a year-end money that was allocated for another project, and now it's gone. It has to, if we don't, they're just going to take it back. Do you want it? And I said, put up more of your fences, your little fences. They actually said little fences. I said, if it's little fences, I don't want to be involved. But if we're going to do for a bigger chunk, and that was the idea of doing a bigger chunk and trying to do CPR, doing CPR on the forest, basically. So I put up a fence thinking that would be enough. Then I sprayed out the grass with Roundup, which I know is a bad thing. But then I got a lot of weeds coming up, so I had to invent, hold on, I had to invent a strategy. So I invented this restoration strategy of planting in native shrubs, and it was this idea of building a house around the trees of native shrubs. And it was something that I came up with out of my own, I don't want to say, it's not that I'm so brilliant, but I oftentimes try to encourage people to take their own view of things. Like, this makes sense to me. It made sense to me that I saw that microhabitat was the problem. So we built the house around the trees. After 20 years, and that one that you couldn't see over there, that green square, that green is 10 acres. There's more jalapepe babies, for example, inside the enclosure than there probably is in the rest of Maui County.
Wow.
10 acres. So it went from being a nothing to now...
overabundant.
Yeah, this is a nothing project. This is like nothing. And now it's kind of looked in throughout the archipelago as a sign of hope. Somebody called it one of the most successful restoration projects in the world. And this technique that I invented, and I invented it out of panic. I did it out of panic because I thought something would work and it didn't. No, it was complete panic. I had no idea. I stay up at night thinking, what the frick have I done? Have I really killed the forest? When I sprayed out the grass, and I thought, and the weeds came in thick. I invented this strategy. Now it's used in all islands. Now we know what we're doing. And the whole technique was actually it sounds funny because we're using herbicides, but what I tell people is everybody uses herbicides. This technique was actually meant to minimize herbicide usage. Because I actually work for the Park Service, where a lot of times they look almost like bailing a hole, right? They just keep on, well, we have to spray again because the weeds are back. Now, so I said, well, you don't want to do that. We spray and then we put in native shrubs to quickly take that space that the weeds would take. And then they actually, instead of being thick like here, see, that's actually an ecological thing that some guys in Europe figured out, is that when you're down here and you're really crowded, really down like weeds tend to be, you see the tree seedlings can't come through. But when you're a shrub and you're up here, right, then you tend to create this layer down here, which is conducive to tree species. So shrubs and trees get along, and herb dominance doesn't. So in a way, I was just breaking that. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. At the time, I didn't know even what the word restoration was. Now I went to the last conference, and there was probably, I tell people there's probably 1,300 people there. We were the only people from Hawaii, sadly enough. Okay. So that's the ecological story. But, I mean, other than that, I think it's that I know this is an unattractive forest, I think, right now. I mean, like, when you look at it, why would you ever want to come back here? A rock in the 20s said, you know, as, what does he say? As promising as it looks on the road, you can collect more species here in a day than you can in a week in the rainforest. Like, that one there is the Aiea tree. That's the, I don't know if you've seen it on the place in Oahu. But, so, that's my little story, and I think it's mostly about the technique. And it's not going to be a really great day because of the weather. How wet is it going to be in there?
And so I worked together with the great organization Non-Event in Boston with Susanna Boley and Michael Rosenstein there to bring this installation into to the UMass Dartmouth campus. And as part of that, during that installation, which was essentially 8-channel audio installation through the stairways and hallways within the Paul Rudolph building, Michael Rosenstein made a series of recordings, both field recordings just within the spaces, but also contact mic recordings that were attached to the windows and to the walls, so that we could actually, in a way, hear what the building's own kind of disturbance by the piece and kind of response to the piece was. That is going to blend into a recording that was made of a performance that I did also in Boston last year at the Municipal Waterworks Museum. This was also a performance in this huge cavernous old waterworks building, full of machinery and glass and steel encased, kind of a concert hall in a way, that was organized also by Non-Event. In this performance piece, I had 6 vocalists standing up in the machines in the ironworks, and they were listening to sound cues to a whole half an hour's worth of archival recordings from Fluxus and Happenings performances from the 50s, 60s, and 70s that were then that I'd edited together for them to listen to, and I'd asked them to simply mimic what the sounds were that were coming through their headset, and then to put them out into this giant resonant space together. And then the discovery was for them to try to figure out how they were going to navigate the space, kind of echolocate it, you might say, and how they were going to come together and form a performing body using just the sounds that they were hearing and mimicking. And from there, I think will be a mix of other released pieces that maybe I can talk with you about after we've heard something. Okay.
Thank you. skein becomes a strand, or braid, or rope, then a coil, a hoop into a wreath. Hardening into a ring, then clad to become a bracelet. Soaked and kneaded, it forms a hat. Then an imitation tent, or a shawl, or a flap on a tent. A pearl? No. A cloak, a curtain, a shroud. Coil the shroud up once again and pack it tight. Pack it, stamp it, bind it. Exhausted, hoist your leg up on upon it as you wipe your brow. And you find you have a stool, a stump. The stool persists, but it rots slowly from within. You have forgotten, but the strand beside it lives and begins to unravel. It becomes a tiled lump, then a mulch. Hosting a multitude living eagerly from it. From a stump to a cave, hosting. Thank you.
distillation of the performance. Thank you.
This is just a reminder that my name is Andy Graydon, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Thank you.
This is Andy Graydon, and you are listening to WGXC in Accra, 90.7 FM. We were just listening to a mix of different pieces that I'll just mention briefly again. A piece that I did originally in Seattle and then again in Massachusetts called To Scale. Then Mishaps and Malaprops, an Oral History, a performance work I did at the Waterworks Museum in Massachusetts last year, which then bled its way into a recent release, a collaborative release I did with the Swiss sound artist Simon called 1606. That's available on his Leerraum net label. And then finally there was what we were listening to, all the bumps and the scrapes and the instrument sounds, were some compiled recordings made from a week-long residency I did in 2013, I believe, at Q02 in Brussels, together with the artists Pierre Girard and David Papapostolou. And I wanted to end the set with that because it was felt like a nice reconsideration of sounds in spaces, because for the residency, we essentially locked ourselves in the studio for a week and decided to record everything that we were doing, and that every day's recordings would then also be available to play back at any time during the next day. So we had this kind of gathering wave of different recordings and activities and rules and instruments and performances and listenings that were became terrific and kind of iterative, and the listening and making and thinking and talking all happened together in one fabric and in one room. So I've got, it looks like I have about 40 minutes left, and so I think that's perfect timing for playing this last piece that I have, which is basically a finished piece made from field recordings that I first presented live to an audience in Cambridge, Massachusetts, for a series called Vespers that the composer Luke Martin organizes there. And I had at the time just come back from a trip to Europe to see, this is in 2017, to see the international art shows that were happening in that area at the time. So I got in one series of just a couple of weeks to go see the Documenta art show that was happening in Athens and in Kassel, Germany, as well as shows that were happening in Berlin and the sculpture project Munster nearby, and then the Venice Biennial. And I took my field recorder with me to all each of those places. And when you're in a situation like these huge biennial exhibitions that have art packed tight together into rooms and hallways and off spaces and city streets, you feel like you're encountering it all the time. And I started to just think about the art as kind of the natural environment. And a lot of this art is performance based, and it's noisy, and it's videos, and it's overlapping sound coming over partitions and barriers to participate with other art. And I thought a lot of those interactions were really fascinating, and so I recorded a lot of them. So this was an opportunity, this Vespers performance was an opportunity for me to kind of think materially through that whole trip and to present some of the excitement and strangeness of what it's like to be not only seeing art as a kind of a flow of experience, but that to consider yourself as a kind of spatial sound mixer moving through these rich environments. And I think with that, I will just bid you all a farewell, and I hope you enjoy.
The whole format of this work is very standardized. They work with DIN A formats. For example, when you see one of the panels has a certain format, and they try to standardize a lot while working. They pick up on the furnishings, the historical furnishings from Peles, the castle, and try to adopt it in a way, in a postmodern process of reproduction, sampling and quotation. So these are very important aspects of their work there. And when you look at the pattern or the streaking of the object, you will realize that it's a very abstracted way of reproducing some kind of a stone or marble-like structure that is it's not colored, it's black and white. And it's also important for the artist to do so, to reference the technique of photocopying again. So you can think of this work as a kind of a copy of a copy of a copy. And when you just remember what I said about the city of Münster, it was rebuilt after the World War. So it's also, in a way, a copy of what was originally historic.
You know, can't turn around or something. Thank you. there's a performance here between 5 and 6 on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. Exactly. Musical instruments. These are hybrids of instruments and furniture. So the artist is from Turkey, but born and raised in Germany. And she has done this kind of creation of musical furniture hybrids before with Scandinavian furniture. And she was invited by Documenta to do something here, so she collected furniture.
keep cool.